Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is the TS Radio Network. Thank you very much. It's been a week. We have a special guest on with us this evening. He's been on with us many times before. He has made a career out of getting hired and fired by the VA, and he's a study in how to fight back and make it work. Sean Higgins is with us, and he has reported numerous times on these chronic problems at the Memphis VA. He's gotten them onto mainstream media, got them on the evening news, and even with all of that, with more than 40 reports of wrongdoing, mishaps, terrible situations, egregious situations at the Memphis VA, not much has changed. They did get their rating upgraded, though, recently. They could get 1 to 5 stars, and they finally made 1 star. they're just booming along there. So with that, I want to welcome our guest, Sean. How you doing this evening?
I'm doing okay, Marty. But actually, to be more accurate on that, Memphis was a 1-star hospital 2 years ago, and they're still a 1-star hospital.
At least they held their position.
I have a congressman and I have a VA director that says that they're improving. And I'm saying, how? 16 veterans died in 1 year.
Oh, my God.
Veterans died in 1 year, and all of these were preventable.
Oh.
And to go back and correct, I've got over 60 disclosures.
To the Office of Special Counsel,
to DAOIG, and from the Office of Whistleblower Accountability. So I've heard nothing from none of these organizations. No kind of follow-up or anything after I make the disclosure. So when
you know,
I don't
that,
hear
that's
anything...
Really... Go ahead.
So when I don't hear anything, that made me go outside to the media.
There
so when
go.
The media comes and asks, when the media comes and asks, then they got, you know, as I say, a staging. They stage an event, and they come out just like our president, and they lie.
The sad part
about all of this is that in the state of Tennessee, we have 5 VA hospitals. And 3 of them are 1 stars.
So, now, Sean, stop and think about this. If these hospitals are this run this poorly, they are this mismanaged, they are causing these many deaths, and all of this stuff is correctable, but nothing's happening. Now, if you ran a private business this way, how long would you be in business?
I would be bankrupt.
How long? I would be
bankrupt and out of business. And I'll give you an example that I give when I talk to people about VA. This is an example that goes on in the Memphis VA hospital. The doctors, primary care doctors in the Memphis VA hospital, on average see 5 patients a day. Where can a doctor stay in private practice and see only 5 patients a day?
How do they get away with that, Sean?
And on average, And in my hospital, I've got 20 doctors that make over $200,000 a year.
Uh-huh.
I've got 16 doctors that make over $300,000 a year. Now, based upon what is occurred in my hospital since 2014. Well, I'll go back. 2012 is when I first started. Well, 2007 is when I first started whistleblowing. But 2012 was when OIG got involved, and 2014 is when everything just blew out the water. So we're talking 4 years. We're talking a 4 year period in here. And you got doctors that see only five patients a day because they spend 3 hours a day doing clerical work, updating patients' charts, doing clinical reminders, ordering labs. Now, when I first brought this suggestion to VA, all computers come with Dragon Speed. When a VA buys a computer, they disable that function from the computer.
Why?
So why not hire some clerical person at $12 an hour to do these functions so the doctors can do what they do, see patients. But because I was a whistleblower, they didn't hear anything I had to say because it was coming from Sean Higgins.
Uh-huh. Well, I just, you know, like I say, why would they disable that program? It would make it far easier for them to do all of these things than just sit and try and type it all up and load it. But I've heard so much about the VA and the mismanagement, the dysfunction of this organization across the board, that nothing surprises me.
We're talking about a budget of $2 billion that they get in increments of 2 years in advance. So this year, VA got... They got their budget in two-year increments, so they got $4 billion.
Oh, wow. Gee, many Christmas. Well,
so that's why you have the widespread fraud that you have. You know, when I was in the military. Well, excuse me, I've been corrected. I'm saying $2 billion. It's $200 billion.
What?
So they got the budget. I said $2 billion. I'm correct.
Yeah.
I stand corrected. It's $200 billion.
Oh, wow.
Two with two zeros behind it. $200
billion. Wow.
So this is why you have the widespread fraud that you do in the VA hospital. Nobody's watching anybody. Everybody's got their hand in the field. Now, I'll give you another example of the fraud, waste, and abuse that's going on in my hospital. Okay. My director, when the VAOIG came out earlier this year, I believe it was July of this year, saying that, you know, 16 veterans died that shouldn't have died. My hospital, when we do the interview and I call them out on it, my director says, well, since I've been here, I've cut the mortality rate in half. We're lower than the VA average. Okay, how do you get to lower than the VA average if you're contracting all your surgeries out?
Wow. Now, Sean, wait a minute. I thought they were making it prohibitive to go outside the VA for any services.
No. What came in effect, and I believe I may be wrong on this year, I think in 2014, 2016, somewhere in those 2 years, I think it's 2014, that the CHOICE program came effect, and it's supposed to be for veterans who live more than 40 miles from the VA, or it takes the VA longer than 30 days to get an appointment. But
okay,
I'm saying, and this is my argument right now, I'm trying to get on the CHOICE program now. My argument with VA hospital, I don't live more than 40 miles from the VA. And my thing is, why should I be forced to go into a place of substandard that's giving substandard care? Congressmen and senators are not made to go where they're given substandard care. I know for a fact that they kill veterans in the Memphis VA hospital. It's documented.
No.
I'm one person. Just imagine what I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, Sean.
So, with that in mind, why are veterans being required to go to a hospital where at any time they might die?
Well, that's exactly why they're required to go there. They want rid of them. You know, they sent them all to war with the promise that when you come home, if you're sick or injured, we'll take care of you. But now they don't want to do it. And
you broke
that,
me.
That's the whole
you
thing.
Sent me off the war. Yeah. You sent me off the war and broke me.
Yeah.
The least you could do is provide me care.
There you go. Sean, I want to move on to our topic for tonight, and that is the refusal of President Trump to lay a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier because it was raining. And as I put in the promo, it was, imagine if our soldiers refused to fight because the weather wasn't perfect. And, you
well,
know,
that,
as I ended up that promo, I said raindrops are far easier to dodge than bullets. But we've got a president who has never served because he had a bone spur. None of his children have ever served. And I just found out this afternoon from a good friend of ours that his grandfather emigrated here to avoid the draft in, I believe, Bulgaria or some country that they all came from, whatever it was. None of them have ever served in the military. And yet that same man will start a war and send your kids and my kids and even us, if he can, to go fight it, but his kids won't go. None of his family will go. None of these senators or representatives or their families will go. It'll be us. And this man couldn't get up enough respect for these men and women who have died fighting in many of these wars that were done nothing for no other reason than corporate greed. He couldn't be bothered because it was raining to go, and then didn't even show up, as I understand it, at Arlington Cemetery the next day for the service there. I think this should have been enough of myself, and I'm not speaking politics here. I don't care what he is. I'm a political atheist. I don't believe none of them. If their mouths open, sounds coming out, they're lying, and I don't care. I don't care whether you like Trump, you don't like Trump. It has nothing to do with it. But this is the President of the United States who refused to get a few raindrops on him to honor our veterans. And as you said, for 56 years, a U.S. president has laid a wreath on the Tomb of the Unknown Soldiers. This was the first time in 56 years our president thought that was just too much of an imposition on him. What do you think about that, Sean?
Well, it's sad. It's atrocious. It started in his trip overseas when he refused to go visit our war dead there.
Yeah.
So
yep.
It surprised me when he did that, but it just shocked me when he wouldn't go to Arlington. It's shameful.
Yeah.
I mean, George Washington led troops in the snow, in a storm, in a blizzard. And here this man for a few raindrops won't go lay a wreath. I mean, certain things come with the office.
Yes.
Certain requirements come with the office.
Yes. I agree. And like I say, this man will send us, our kids, everybody we know, into a war. But his own family won't go. None of his children. They'll all go home and eat a nice dinner and go home to their palatial estate. Couldn't muster up enough respect to honor these people who did go. I'm sorry, that's unforgivable. In my estimation, I don't care who's president, that is unforgivable.
I mean, it's shameful. I mean, how can you defend that?
You can't. Have you heard from any other veterans on this?
I've been watching MSNBC and Chris Matthews devoted the bigger part of his show about it tonight. And he had a few people that called in and he read a few letters. And veteran organizations are just outraged by it. You know, for the president to send a Veterans Day tweet. And then they kind of like today was like a do. He tried like a do-over, you know.
Uh-huh.
How do you get past that? How can you tell somebody that you truly care about veterans?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, this man is so detached from the public. You know, and we would have fared no better. Don't make any mistake about this. We would have fared no better under Clinton. She'd have made a big show of it, but she doesn't give a crap. I mean, she just does not. And
there are protocols that come with the office of the president, and laying a wreath at Arlington National Cemetery is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of them.
And if if the president doesn't respect our soldiers and the people who have given their lives for this country, you know, that message trickles down into the public.
He just used U.S. troops at the border.
Yes.
And made a comment that saying, "Hey, folks that are throwing rocks at U.S. soldiers, we're going to fire on you. That's against the rules of engagement."
Well,
his own secretary.
Rules of engagement. I'm sorry, but when we get down to making rules of engagement and the rules of war, this sounds like a business enterprise to me. I mean, if you're at war, it's no holds barred. I'm sorry, there are no rules. There are no rules or you wouldn't be at war. I mean, when did we come to accept this kind of rules of engagement? Please, there's no rules. You're out there killing people.
The rules of engagement say I cannot fire on unarmed people. Rocks are not bullets.
Oh, we do it all the time.
So we got the president of the United States telling people to fire on our people.
On whose people?
On the refugees coming at our border.
Those are not refugees. Escaping war. They are not people who are going hungry. None of them look like they've missed a meal. They all look relatively clean, well-fed, and they're marching this way. Now, I'm sorry, Sean, but if, 7,000 Iraqis or Libyans or, you know, Afghanis or Syrians or Iranians started marching towards our southern border, everybody'd be screaming bloody damn murder. And these are countries we have attacked.
You gotta thank Jimmy Carter for that.
For what?
Castro emptied his jails in the state of Florida in the late 70s. Jimmy Carter started that policy.
Wait a minute. Well, what does that have to do with this? That has nothing to do with this. Who organized these people? Who's you can't run a battalion
of
soldiers
without
food and water. Shut up, John, I'm talking. There's a process in place, all right. Who's bringing these people food and water? And then we had video of people walking around in this crowd handing them money. Who's funding this operation? These people didn't get up simultaneously and all of their own say, I just think I'm going to go on a 2,000-mile trek and go to the United States and demand they let me in. No.
We don't have to let you in if you don't meet the criteria. My problem with this is, why are we housing these people? When we find out that they don't belong here, put them on a bus and send them back to their border, across the border. Why are we taking families and putting families in temporary prisons? Nowhere in the world do they allow you to come in their country if they can't verify who you are. Nowhere in the world do they do that.
No.
Why is America being asked to do that? John.
There is so much more at play here than what you and I are touching on. This is far-reaching. It has a lot of tentacles. I just got information about how the fertility rate in men here in the United States is down by 60%. And they figure it by 2060, I don't think it's going to take that long, that men will be totally infertile. Now, we've already sterilized a great number of girls with Gardasil and other vaccines. That's basically what they're for, is sterilization. It has nothing to do with preventing disease. Okay, so we have a birth rate, and I just saw on CNN here a while back, a woman, an actuarial from Social Security, showing a graph showing our birth rate dropping precipitously. At the same time, our mortality rate for the elderly is spiking because of hospice and other programs that hasten end of life. Okay, so what you're ending up with is a non-producing population. Yet at the same time, this woman came out and said, with the population having grown by 20 to 30 million, we're not sure. How can you not be sure, for one thing? And secondly, how could the population grow if your death rate on the elderly is accelerating and your birth rate is decelerating? How in the world can your population go? We are not producing enough children to facilitate the replacement population. In other words, mortality is offset by births. We're not coming anywhere close to doing that. So like in the Holodomor, where Stalin killed off 20-some million Ukrainians by starving them to death, at the same time, he's bringing in a replacement population. And he panders to them, coddles them and everything, till he killed off enough Ukrainians that then he turned around and he turned on his replacement population, and they were poor, disenfranchised, they were fleeing starvation and more, and they were this and that, and he let them in and he patted them all on the head and said, I'll take care of you, until he got rid of the Ukrainians, and then he turned on them and they killed him. Well, anyway, this is what you are seeing happen here. 7,000 people out of Honduras did not get up simultaneously on one day and say, hey, let's go on a 2,000-mile trek to the United States and tell them they have to let us in. Somebody put these people up. Somebody organized them. This is a plan in action. And if you noticed, that caravan was all over the news. You couldn't go anywhere. It was showing all these people storming towards our southern border. Of course, they're 2 or 3 months away, but they're going towards the southern border. And as soon as that election was over, now we don't hardly hear anything about it. So what are the Republicans saying? The right-wing faction of the one bird that controls D.C. They're saying, oh, they're coming here so they can vote Democratic. I'm just sure those people are walking 2,000 miles so they can vote. I just know they are. Uh-huh. And then on the left side, it's you don't want to let people in. You need to be more. You need to kiss my fluffy butt. We cannot take care of our own, or are unwilling to take care of our own. They are going to let these people in, make no mistake about it. And two more waves of them are coming behind the initial 7,000. Like I say, this did not start. This was not a thought that came into somebody's mind and said, hey, let's head for the U.S.
Don't you think it might have been incited by somebody, by this certain person just tweeting to the world, telling them, God damn it, if you come here, this is what we're going to do to you?
Yeah. Well, you know, why would they come here? For what? What is it they think they're going to escape? Drugs? Please. We've got pharmaceutical companies here that got worse stuff on the street than any drug dealer could ever come up with. And we have doctors writing out prescription for it, killing 17,000 people on average a month. Violence? The most violence you're going to see is out of law enforcement. You can get shot here for a broken taillight. You can get shot totally complying with a police officer, or you can have a whole pack of them jump on you and stomp you to death for doing things like selling single cigarettes on the street. I know that's just a terrible thing. And, you know, security? No, none of us have any of that. We have a mass population. Go ahead.
Are we really sure that there is really a caravan?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, that's the whole thing. Is there really? And
is there really a caravan? Because I haven't heard one foreign person, one foreign government say anything about these people going leaving their country.
No,
I haven't heard the president say anything. I haven't heard the president say anything about talking to the head of state from the country that they're leaving. Why aren't they stopping these people from migrating?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So,
well, why does it? Wait a minute. Why doesn't Mexico stop their people from leaving?
That's what I'm asking. That's the question I'm asking.
Yeah,
that's the question I'm asking.
20 to 30 million of them have come here.
That's the question I'm asking.
Not only is it our border,
it's their border too.
Yeah. Well, why don't they stay on their side of the border? You don't see us running down there trying to invade Mexico.
What I'm asking, it's illegal to go into their country, right? And so it's illegal to come into the U.S. So why don't they have troops on the other side on their border stopping people from leaving illegally? Why does America feel like it's our responsibility? Why isn't that a joint effort?
See, that's what I'm saying. We have 20 to 30 million people from Mexico who have invaded our country. Now, this didn't start primarily under Carter. This started under George W. Bush, the doofus, when he signed the Security and Prosperity Partnership in 2005 down there in Waco, Texas. And that calls for the free movement of people and goods to facilitate corporations. Business, they called it, but it's corporations. And this is us and them being made chattel property, movable property and goods. Okay, and we exist for no other reason than to facilitate the corporation. So since that was signed between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, since that was signed, another 12 million people have come across that border. And people keep saying, why don't they deport them? Why don't they send them back? It's because of the Security and Prosperity Agreement. Because under that, there is no deportation. There is no border. We are one big, happy continent. The North American Union, this was the groundwork. Before that, Sean, back in, I believe, 1990 or 91, George Bush Sr. signed the North American Initiative, which allowed free trade zones to be developed here in the U.S. And like out in Idaho, they have a huge one. There's, I think, 42 of them now, and these are sovereign foreign territories inside the United States. They do their own manufacturing. They bring in from their country their own work crews. They only have to hire a total of 10, and in some places only 2, American citizens. And they do their own manufacturing, their own shipping, and nothing is taxed, not a thing, not labor, not product leaves that free trade zone. And then it's paid as a tax at a reduced rate. But those people who came there that were brought in from, like China brought in, it's unemployed, it's poor, and everything to work. If they live there for 2 years and they don't get in any trouble, they get automatic citizenship and they can move outside the free trade zone and go do something else. And then just here, 3 years ago, the U.S. forced China, the federal government forced Idaho to sell China a 50-mile square mile parcel of land so they can build a Chinese city. We've got a big shipping terminal sitting in Kansas City that says over the top of it as you enter sovereign Mexican territory. Now, how in the hell does this happen? And yet we will send our military all over the world to blow people up, to blow them away. You talked about the rules of war or engagement or whatever it is, and you can't shoot unarmed people. We do it every damn day of the week. I have talked to so many veterans that have been in various wars, multiple wars, who have said one of the hardest things I'm dealing with was the orders to shoot men, women, and children. Ask no questions, fire. And I can't live with it. So we do this all the time. So this rules of war and rules of engagement and all that, it's just crap. And it means nothing. And, of course, one of the most notorious was the My Lai massacre in Vietnam. It was not the only massacre but it was one of the most notorious. And, you know, this is what I'm saying. We send these people to do these god-awful things, then bring them home and throw them by the wayside. We give them less than, you know, what you would even call substandard care. And these people, I think when you come home that damaged and your psyche is shocked by what you were forced to do, that it went against everything in you, and they come home so damaged, and the best we can do is this piss-poor care in these VA hospitals. And we've got a president who doesn't even respect them enough to get his damn hair wet attending an honorary, you know, a wreath laying to honor these
people. He wouldn't have gotten wet. He would have had an aide standing there with an umbrella. That's crazy.
Umbrella, yeah. Exactly. If not several. I think this whole thing spoke to this man's arrogance, to his lack of detachment or attachment to the public. To him and many of the people around him, those of us out here, we're just cannon fodder in one way or another. That's all we are. We aren't deserving of this man's time. We are not deserving of his respect or appreciation. This, I think, more than anything, Sean, highlighted the fact that this man, if nothing else, is a sociopath, but is so narcissistic that he absolutely cannot relate to the fact that out here in the public, those of us whose families or ourselves went to these wars and fought, some of us who died, he can't relate to the fact that this was painful for us. He really doesn't care.
It's shameful.
Yeah.
Very shameful. But yep. you made mention to about Donald Trump's grandfather, and you were correct. His grandfather did get deported.
Yeah, from Germany, Bulgaria,
yeah,
something in Germany.
Yeah, he ended up writing a letter pleading to stay there, but they ended up deporting him. So is that where the hatred comes from?
I don't know. He's just but there's something that is not hooked up in this man. I mean, obviously, you can't have a president that sits around tweeting. Now, I'm sorry. You know, we're involved in how many wars? 94 armed conflicts that we're not supposed to know about. We're at having armed conflicts all over Africa. We have antagonized Syria, Iran. We have blown up Iraq, Afghanistan. We are starving people to death in Yemen. And this man is tweeting? For God's sake. I'm sorry. This is just really blowing me. And I don't care. You know, I'm already getting messages here about, you just hate Trump. No, I don't hate him. I'm puzzled by how detached this man is, how there is no sense of social obligation. There is no sense of propriety, no sense of honor, no sense of anything that we would expect from a president. I mean, there's nothing.
It's lie, lie, lie.
Yes.
Where they put a camera in front of them, you get a lie.
Yeah. Well, that's the way with all politicians. That's why I say if their mouth's open and sound's coming out, you're basically hearing a lie, because they're going to lie about something, if not everything.
We get lies out of this president. I mean, just for the sake of lying, you know. He just lied the other day when the newspaper reporter, you know, CNN's now suing the White House now because they took this guy's press credentials.
Like, Acosta.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. And did you see, which I had to laugh, Fox News joined CNN's lawsuit over violation of First Amendment rights. I mean, now whoever thought that would happen? They're arch enemies.
Yes.
Or they're supposed to be, anyway.
Well, I think it's all a sham.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you saw him, did you see
okay.
the, Did you see the video of that? I mean, and this guy just was hammering him, asking questions, and he kept saying, sit down, you're done, you're done, you're done. And, you know, like, you don't do that. You're the president of the United States. You don't do that.
He turns around and talks about how rude this person is, and then he turns around and berates a female, an African-American employee. That's just a racist question. What was racist about that? You got to ask, do you think that you preaching this hate, do you think that's making people act weird?
It was a racist question.
But to tell people waving the Nazi flag that there were some good people down there in Charlottesville.
Yeah.
I don't get that.
So, you know, they just had those two big they had one here a few months back and another big white supremacist Nazi rally there in Noonan, Georgia. Now, I have family down there who said what they didn't tell you was that, especially with the first one, that more than 6,000 people showed up that they held back, who confronted these people, and those people were not from Noonan. They had been bussed in and telling them to get out. Those people down there don't want any more part of this. They show up again, and they are not locals. And you go back to Charlotte. Here he's talking about there's both some very good people on both sides. So I'm sorry if you're talking about hating another race of people because they don't have the right skin color. I don't think you're a very good person. That's just my opinion.
I'm asking how are people waving the Nazi flag good people?
Yes, exactly.
They were waving the Nazi flag. How are they good people?
Yep. And see, and that's something else that kind of gets on me too, Sean. We got all this stuff in North Carolina. We had that senator out there who got a bill passed. You can't criticize Israel. It's a felony if you do. Really? We got people marching in our streets waving a German Nazi flag. What about them? These people in this caravan are waving the flag of another country and singing their national anthem. Why are you coming here? Why didn't you stay home and fight for your country? If you wouldn't fight for your country, you're damn sure not going to come here and fight for mine. Go ahead.
Just think about what's going on in Georgia. We've got a guy down there running for governor that's the attorney, that's the secretary of state who's over the elections. Now, I was down in Louisville, Georgia. I was down in Louisville, Georgia when they put those people off the bus, those senior citizens that thought they were going to early vote. I was down there when that happened.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's just crazy. When they went looking and they found like 700 voting machines in the plastics, brand new, still in the warehouse in Georgia. I'm in a small town in Wiley, Georgia, where they only have like three polling places, but they only had one. And you had to drive 10 miles to get to it.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, that's just crazy to me. Look what's going on in Florida again.
Does that surprise
you? I thought I voted my absentee ballot. It was lucky it got through. I went and checked my tracking, and according to the tracking, if I trust that, my vote was counted. I'm not sure.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, do you know, I'm going to admit something here, and it's probably going to make a lot of people upset. This was the first time in my adult life I did not vote. After this last presidential election, and I really had a hard time voting then because if Trump and Clinton were the best either of these factions of the one-party system had, we're in trouble. These were two of the most highly unqualified people for that office that could have been put out there. And somebody said, well, you have to pick between the lesser of two evils. No, that's not a choice. That's not
a choice. No, evil is still evil. Evil is still evil.
Yes. But I went in and I voted, and I did vote for Trump because the idea of Clinton being president absolutely terrified me. This woman is dangerous. And then we find out he is basically not all there.
I'm not too sure that wasn't the ultimate plan.
Really?
Just think about it. Yes, just think about it. Mrs. Clinton did not campaign the whole month of October.
Mm.
The month leading up to the month leading up to the election, she did not campaign in those swing states, in those battleground states. The president was out.
Yeah.
President Obama was out campaigning for her, but where was the candidate?
Well,
she was
yeah,
strong.
But you know what I think?
She thought they had this in the bag. They had stolen it from Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, exactly.
So they figured that, you know, they figured that an old truck got in there and put the switch on them. We'd be out all day.
You know, Sean, I've talked about this. I was watching the election, the night of the election, I was watching, and I was watching Fox News because I think they're they and MSN, quite frankly, are nothing but propaganda machines, totally. And I was watching it, and at 3:30 in the morning, he had taken Florida, took Pennsylvania, took Ohio, North Carolina. They were up in Wisconsin. It looked like he took that. And there, but it was when he took, I believe it was Pennsylvania. And at that point, she had just gotten all 55 or 56 electoral votes from California, which was expected. But even with that, she had to look up to see his butt. There was no way she could catch him.
Well,
and,
let me ask you this. If truly she got more votes than him, why is she not president? I understand why she's not, but I'm saying truly if the one person one vote is supposed to work, if she got more votes than him, she should be president. But she didn't.
Well, that's
the Electoral College.
The Electoral College
made him president. And that's a group of what?
Yeah, exactly.
Elitist. They're not you and I. They're mayors, senators, former congressmen, former mayors.
But you go back to the Bush-Gore election, same thing. He outran Bush by, 600,000 votes minimally. The Supreme Court, the first time in history, the Supreme Court was able to hear a suit that was already prepared within 48 hours. Normally it takes 4 years, but within 48 hours they could hear this case and they decided the election. They actually selected our president for us and put Doofus in the office. Now, there again, let's go back to that president. This was one of the most unintelligent, mentally compromised manglers of the English language who didn't have a freaking clue about anything. And this
okay,
man
Marty,
is the president
you just answered the question.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Presidents are not elected. They are selected.
They are selected. Yes. And I've tried to tell people, Sean, nobody gets into that office. I don't care whether you call it. Let's go back again to the Security and Prosperity Partnership of 2005. And people said they want to forget about that. Come into 2011. Obama revised it and codified it into law. So you have a Republican, then you have a Democrat who okays this. And now you come into this presidency, and you haven't heard him say a peep about it, probably because he doesn't know anything about it, and you couldn't tell him because he wouldn't understand anyway. But I think one of the greatest coups ever committed on the American public was them thinking there was a difference between Democrats and Republicans. And the only place that matters is out in the public, out in D.C. It is one big party, and you wasn't invited. And so this all goes down exactly the way these people want it to go down. And all this stuff about calling people libtards or moonbats or all of this other stuff, that's all for show. It's all dog and pony stuff. It matters
the
not
last
because
Republican,
these people. Go ahead.
The last Republican president to win the popular vote was Ronald Reagan.
Mhm. Yeah. And he wasn't real bright.
None of them have been.
Yeah. Well, Obama was. I have to give Obama credit for that. That was quite an intelligent.
Obama. Obama was a scholar, and they want to say Clinton was, but Clinton never, he never finished the Rhodes Scholar. He was selected, but he never finished.
Oh, well, but then, you know, and Clinton, but he was a relatively intelligent man. And one thing I'll say for him, I didn't like NAFTA, didn't like CAFTA, didn't like any of that stuff, but that man had enough common sense that he knew if he didn't keep the public happy, whatever they did in D.C. was going to blow up. So it was going to backfire on him one way or the other. So that's where this man was very clever. He was able to pacify the public while they did their dirty work. These other presidents have not. They've bred contention.
He was the master of distraction.
Yes, yes. And
we had you all thinking about him and Monica Lewinsky and what they were doing in the White House. We don't know what they were doing over in East Asia and Mexico.
Hell, all those guys out there were doing something.
Everybody was talking about, hey, you know, what he was doing in the White House with Monica Lewinsky. And then
yep.
we had this Republican Congress that brought the president up on charges, just like if the Democrats do what the Republicans
yep.
did by going after this president for impeachment, they do not control the United States Senate. So it's going nowhere.
Yeah. Well,
so
the thing is,
we're
going to
waste money. We're going to waste money and time trying to impeach President Trump when they got nothing. The United States Senate is controlled by the Republican Congress. There's no way the Republicans
right.
are going to impeach their own guy.
No. But
it's never,
you know,
it's never
going
to get to the floor.
If you watch the impeachment where they attempted to impeach Clinton, you saw, led by Newt Gingrich, probably one of the most, he's a serial philanderer, for one thing. That man just can't keep his rocket in the pocket. But I really don't know whoever looked at that man and thought to themselves, my goodness, I got to have me some of that. That has got to be one of the most repulsive men I have ever seen. But anyway, leading this procession of these ever so righteous, pious Republicans into the House, talking about, you know, how egregious it was, President Clinton's behavior. And then one by one, they're picked off. Bob Livingston, who was supposed to be a very righteous and Christian man, was found out to have a mistress and a child he was supporting. And this went on and on and on till enough of them had been knocked down for their own lewd and lascivious behavior that they finally basically walked away from it. They're all doing it with power and money. It affects men, I think, disproportionately to women. Men immediately abuse it in almost every situation. They feel entitled. They feel like they can do whatever they want. And you have the epitome of that sitting in the White House right now. This man, how he has spoken about women.
35% of white women knew that the president said that he grabbed them and you got to grab them in the crotch. And they voted for him.
Well,
35% of white women voted for a president.
Yes, he did say that. And then they had the big vagina rebellion where all these women paraded around and carried on. And I was not impressed. I wrote an article about it called The Vagina Rebellion. But anyway, see, the part that they should have been incensed about. Stop, Sean. The part they should have been incensed about was the following statement. Not that he said you could walk up and grab him, but what he said was that should have had them on fire and angry at other women was, and they'll let you do it too, because we all have known women, who will do anything, and I mean anything, and allow anything to get what they want. Now, this man was speaking the truth when he said this. And they'll let you do it, too. The anger should have been at the women that have facilitated this, that have gone along with it, that have traded off their bodies and their morality. Go ahead.
What about the statement, she's my daughter. If she wasn't my daughter, I'd date her. That didn't give you pause for worry?
Yeah, that I'm telling you, that one right there. Yeah.
What male thinks of his daughter in a sexual manner? That didn't give you pause?
Yeah, it gave everybody pause. I think the whole country went into shock behind that one. Because you're absolutely right.
The president, and he makes the statement, I have good moral character.
No, he has no sense of morality whatsoever. That's evident in the things he says and how he acts. This man has no sense of, and he has no feeling of obligation to be moral. And this is what comes from living this privileged life where he's never been responsible for anything, never been accountable for anything. He's a serial cheater. He's cheated on every one of the women he's been married to.
They asked me a question when Hillary Clinton was running against Donald Trump. And when he first announced, and I said, well, when he won the nomination, I was like, well, Trump's gonna win. He's been a part of their club his entire life. Money,
mm-hmm.
money is what runs this country. And I hate to say it, and it's a crude truth, but what does the white man treat worse than he treats a black man? His white woman.
Yep.
His white woman. Yep. White women did not get the right to vote until 1920. Blacks got the right to vote in 1865.
Mm-hmm.
But women didn't get the right to vote until 1920.
Well, it was almost 1935 before they could inherit directly any property or money. They had to have a husband or a male guardian who would handle the money for them because they were just too silly and too feeble-minded to do it on their own.
This is a man, John, this is just
a testament to what I've always said. The world is backwards. This is not the way things were supposed to be. Women were supposed to be running things. You can tell that by the way they're built. They have a bigger brain. They're smarter. They're more calculating, more logical, more critical. Men were built for the grunt work, Sean. You can tell by the way they're built and they're low intelligence. They're further down on the evolutionary scale than women are. And, I just had to say that, Sean. I'm sorry. But I just don't know. Go ahead.
This is a man that's putting people on the Supreme Court that thinks like him.
Yes. And
that's dangerous.
Yes. Did you watch in all those hearings, and Kavanaugh was not angry. If you noticed, he was not angry because she exposed what he had done. He was angry because she dared to speak out.
What I noticed about the whole thing was his temperament and his demeanor. His temperament and demeanor is not someone that I want to put on the judge. He's going to go after people now. Anybody that had anything to do with screwing him over, he's going to go after them. Yes. That is not the temperament that you need in a Supreme Court justice.
Mm-hmm.
Irregardless of whether he did it or he didn't do it. The temperament that he showed was not the temperament of a Supreme Court justice.
Mm-hmm. Because he was verging on rage at being questioned and having his behavior exposed.
That guy is he's going to go after folks.
Yep. I agree. On that topic, a little bit off the rails here. Let's go back to Judge Scalia. Did you notice when he died mysteriously down there in Texas on that ranch? And Poindexter, before anybody could script him, came out and said, when I found him, he had a pillow over his face. That got changed. Did you hear the crickets chirping in D.C.? Honest God, nobody was saying anything other than we really admired Judge Scalia. Wait a minute. You just had a Supreme Court justice dropped off at a special ranch down in Texas for reasons unknown, and he died there mysteriously, suddenly.
How about there's no autopsy pictures, and the autopsy wasn't published?
Yeah, and a magistrate 20 miles away who never saw him, examined the body.
Just happened to be in the area.
Yeah, said, it was from natural causes.
Oh,
now, that magistrate go ahead.
How about all of a sudden Justice Kennedy decides, hey, I want to leave. I want to retire.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
And guess who gave him his investments in the bank? Trump's son.
Oh, imagine that. Imagine that. Sean, we're down to about 3 minutes here. This has gone too fast. And as all of you can tell, and I'm just getting a ton of messages, people are, one lady said, she said, I don't know whether to laugh or cry. And then somebody else said, you two are hysterical together. And, we might be. We've verged on hysteria before. But, Sean, I want to thank you for coming on tonight and talking with us. And we will be revisiting with you. We have to have you on every so often just to spice things up. And again, everybody, I think you all ought to send a letter to President Trump and let him know what you think about the fact that he thought he was just too damn special to have to lay a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier or show up at Arlington Cemetery the next day to honor all those people who gave their lives so that he could be president. It's just absolutely disgusting. I want to remind everyone, these shows are brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit that takes place at the end of July every year in Washington, D.C., and the public is cordially invited. There's so much going on there. It runs 3 days. You need to be there for all 3 days because there's just something constantly happening. Sean, again, thank you for coming on tonight. We will be back with you again. Go ahead.
One more thing. Thanksgiving is the day we pause to give thanks for the things we have. Veterans Day is the day we pause to give thanks for the people who fought for the things we have.
Yes, yes. And keep in mind, Thanksgiving with the Pilgrims and the Indians ended with a major massacre because after that meal was over and everybody went to sleep, the Pilgrims went and slaughtered every one of those Indians. And think about that when you're eating your turkey. But anyway, everybody have a good night. Everybody, thank you for tuning in and all the messages. This is Sean's always an exciting guest to have on. And we will have him back again. Again, tune in next week. Well, next week we won't be on because it's Turkey Day. So we'll be back the week after that. And we may be on Saturday about the hearing that took place today on the Women of Forestry. I have to get with everybody and make sure what we're doing there. But kind of watch for the promo just in case. And with that being said, we'll say good night. Good night, Sean.
Good night. Thank you.